Good day, everyone. This is Tim Hooks. Thank you for joining us again for another podcast with ILTA and Microsoft. Our guest, as usual, is Larry Kuhn, and today we're going to talk a little bit about Skype, Skype for Business, and the application formerly known as Link. And before we begin, I'm going to let Larry introduce himself, tell you a little bit about him, and then we'll get underway with questions. Larry?
Great. Thanks, Tim. So Larry Kuhn, I'm an account technology strategist with Microsoft. Work with several law firms who are members of ILTA. I'm happy to be here today to talk about Skype for Business.
Okay, great. Well, as I alluded to in the beginning there, the application formerly known as Link is now Skype. Is that accurate, or is Link still out there in some form?
Yeah, that's we did go through a rebranding to align the branding of the communication technology that we have on the business side with the term that we use for our consumer service, which is Skype, with no qualifiers. On the enterprise and business side, we call it Skype for Business. So previously, we had a kind of long lineage of product names. Way back in the day, some people might recall Office Communication Server, and then that was rebranded to be called Link, L-Y-N-C, and it was Link for 2010 and 2013 versions, and then we rebranded it to be called Skype for Business. And from a terminology standpoint, we used to differentiate very strongly between Link on-premises and Link online. But when we went through the branding exercise to move to Skype for Business, I've noticed in our documentation and marketing and so forth that we've kind of lost that differentiation between the online and on-premise versions. However, just to make the point, Skype for Business server is still available for deployment in on-premises scenarios as well. So it works together with our online service. And we don't really differentiate between the two realms that much anymore. So you'll just see the terminology Skype for Business referring to the technology that we're talking about here today.
Okay. Would you describe the on-prem server as a potential replacement for a PBX?
It definitely has grown up to become that. So in the early days of the product, we wouldn't have necessarily recommended that, but that's been our long-term product direction for a long time. And the Skype for Business server does have the capability to function as a PBX replacement should you choose to do it. And in the online service, we are going to be rolling out over the course of many, many months, but rolling out PBX replacement capabilities in the online services as well. So right now what we have is in preview the ability to do audio conferencing in the cloud, and then we're going to add the ability to do PBX replacement in the cloud as well. So that's the strategic direction for the product, and the on-premises server is generally picking up and mimicking all the capabilities that we introduce first into the cloud.
Sounds great. Well, that question jumped the gun a little bit. Let's talk about the capabilities that are, you know, out of the box, not too complicated, Skype for Business.
Yeah, so the kind of the inventory of capabilities is this. So first of all, it begins with the concept of presence. So Skype for Business, every time you log in, it will advertise your availability status to anybody else who's on the Skype for Business service. And that presence facility is nicely integrated into your Outlook calendar and can be aware of what's going on your workstation. So we call it smart presence or advanced presence. In the telecommunications industry, a lot of times PBX has had the facility to show off-hook status, right? So the only thing they knew about was if you were in a phone call and you were using the handset on your desk. Skype for Business is more intelligent than that. We can advertise your status as in a meeting, because Skype for Business knows that your calendar has you in a meeting at a given point in time. We can also differentiate between being in a meeting and being on a call. We can also differentiate between simply being in a meeting and if you have moved into the presenter role in the meeting. So we're integrated with PowerPoint. We know if PowerPoint is in presentation mode, then we can change your status to do not disturb and display your status as being in a meeting. So, you know, that helps your team understand if you're interruptible at a given point in time. Now, the individual whose status is being broadcast is always in complete control about how much of that information they want to disclose. So there are configuration settings for each user where they can go in and they can override what the automatically generated present status is. And if they choose to, they can show themselves as offline or away from their desk or, you know, whatever manually set status they prefer for everybody to see. So presence is number one. And presence is kind of the foundation of the rest of the capabilities. So the next capability is instant messaging. And most folks are probably pretty familiar with that concept. It's similar to SMS or texting on your phone, but it's more pervasive than that because it goes across the desktop. It works with the Skype for Business mobile applications. And, you know, you're reachable pretty much on any device you choose to sign in and be available on. Next, after instant messaging, I would talk about audio and video. So that's your ability to have person-to-person audio and or video conversations. And then we can escalate those to multi-party conference calling situations as well. Next up after, go ahead.
On the audio, would that work, for example, if two people just had laptops and no soft phones or any of that kind of thing? Is the audio can just immediately make use of microphones and so on in a desktop device?
Yeah, it definitely can. So the Skype for Business client software takes care of all of the necessary configuration. It'll recognize that you have a microphone built into a laptop. It'll recognize that you've got a webcam and will just automatically make those things available. So person-to-person calls happen using a peer-to-peer protocol. So as long as two people are together on the same network, you'll be able to have a direct call with them. Now, if you're separated across networks, you will need the intermediation of the Skype for Business server or the Skype for Business online service to help route the connection. But once the connection is made, for a person-to-person conversation, the audio path is directly between the two workstations. The same with the video path in a person-to-person call. And once you add a third person, then it kind of escalates, as we call it, to a conference. And the conference is hosted then on the service or the server in the back end. So each of the participants, rather than connecting to each other's machines, they'll connect to the server. But it's all pretty invisible to the end user. The end user doesn't really get involved in any of that. It just happens automatically. So the software client on your workstation takes care of changing the connections under the hood.
Okay. All right. Sounds great.
Yep. And so the last two major features I want to talk about that are capabilities of Skype for Business are the ability to do remote presentations. So a single individual in a meeting can be a presenter and they can present PowerPoint content to all of the other participants in a meeting. And then the last capability is the ability to do desktop sharing. Desktop sharing you can kind of think of as the top of the pyramid as far as capability, because then you can show any application. You can show all of your desktop or any single application on your desktop and broadcast that to any of the other participants. And desktop sharing also has the capability for the presenter to grant control to one of the other participants in the meeting. So it's a controlled operation. Nobody else can take over your desktop without your permission, but you can definitely grant permission to somebody else. So that's helpful in help desk type scenarios where, you know, somebody calls in, they need to know how to perform a certain function. They can grant permission to the help desk user who can then go and remote control their machine.
Yeah, that looks great. I've done some of this with a vendor I work with where we have a Skype call. And they present their desktop, and the whole thing is handled with my Skype for Business client, although we don't have any of the on. We just have the end client.
Mm-hmm.
That we're working with does, and it works great. It's very seamless, and it is easy to use, so I can attest to that.
That's great.
Can you tell us a little bit more about, you know, you mentioned at the beginning there's Skype and then Skype for Business. And
right.
Tell us more about the differentiation on that besides, you know, business versus consumer.
Yeah,
A little
certainly.
more technical, I guess.
Sure. So Skype was an acquisition that Microsoft made a number of years ago. So they had their own technology in terms of the protocols that they use for communicating across the internet. And all of their technology was highly optimized for kind of what I would call the Wild West of consumer computing, where you have very little control over the internet connections between the parties. You have very little control over the configuration of any of the workstations at any of the endpoints. So they brought to the table a lot of highly robust protocol technology that did not exist previously in the office communication server environment. Those legacy products of Microsoft were designed a little bit more conservatively, or I guess with the notion of a controlled network environment in mind. So, they had a little bit of trouble, quite honestly, when they got into what I would call non-optimized network configurations. So the Skype technology for the consumer is something that we've been leveraging and bringing over into the Skype for Business product. And we've had to do it gradually and over time because changing protocols is a tricky business and you don't want to create incompatibilities. From a business strategy standpoint, the Skype consumer service is a free service. It's available to anybody to sign up and use. It does have kind of a freemium model where there's kind of basic functionality that anybody has access to. But if you want to do some extended things like dial out to landlines, PSTN numbers, or if you want to send SMS messages to mobile phones, those are extra cost services. So that's how the consumer business model is set up. And the consumer business model is primarily focused on person-to-person calling. It does have a group calling capability, but it's really a secondary focus for the consumer service. The last thing I'll say about the consumer service is it's a completely flat namespace worldwide, right? So any Skype user can call any other Skype user anywhere in the world without restriction or constraint. Contrast that then to Skype for Business, where each enterprise that creates and manages a Skype for Business infrastructure, be it on premises or in Skype for Business online, it's kind of a walled garden. They control the boundary access to their enterprise. So if you are, contoso.com, you could decide whether or not you want to allow Skype for Business conversations to cross the contoso.com boundary. So it's an explicit decision. That's one major difference. Another major difference is that Skype for Business provides that enterprise with a number of administrative controls. So things like being able to audit log IM conversations and record those for the enterprise's history purposes, that's a capability that only exists in the Skype for Business model.
Okay. And the boundary issue you mentioned there, where Skype for Business can decide, whether or not Skype is can be used outside the organization, for example, is that an all or nothing? Could Contoso, for example, say, I only want to talk to Northwind Publishing. I don't want to talk to any other companies besides that. Is it granular in that way, or more like floodgates?
Yeah, no, there are a couple. You can do it either way. So, there are a couple of administrative control levels. The first is on or off. So that's kind of the big switch, whether you want to allow conversations to go outside your organization. And then the next level beneath that is you can decide if you want to allow those external conversations to be only with other Skype for Business enterprises, or if you want to also allow those external conversations with Skype consumer users. So that's
Okay.
the next level down. Then the next level after that, you can get even more granular. You can say we have a specific set of authorized business partners, Fabricam or Northwind Traders, whoever, relative to Contoso, and you can explicitly whitelist their domains and only allow conversations with those domains. Or you could flip it around and do it the other way and say, we will allow conversations with any domain but maybe will block or deny those specific competitors of ours, right? So if you, you know, Pepsi, Coke kind of scenario, they might allow conversations. Coca-Cola might allow conversations with any other Skype for Business customers except for Pepsi. So, you know, you can choose to do that either way that makes sense. And then another, then going down one last level, is you have user level permissions. So you can decide on a user by user basis whether they can have conversations that are what we call federated conversations that go beyond the domain or not. So there's quite a robust set of administrative control over that.
And these controls are available whether this is the on-prem or the hosted.
Yes, it's exactly the same set of controls in both cases, yeah.
Okay. So Skype and Skype for Business can work together so long as it's administratively allowed.
That's right. And there are a few caveats to be aware of as far as the integration between Skype and Skype for Business. So generally speaking, a person-to-person conversation is absolutely fine and will work as expected. So a Skype for Business user could dial out to a Skype consumer user. So very similar to, you know, a phone call scenario. The things that are disallowed are having a desktop sharing session with a Skype consumer user. That won't work. You can do a federated, you know, one enterprise to another and do desktop sharing of Skype for Business to Skype for Business. That'll work fine. But out to a Skype consumer user, that's not allowed. So that's one kind of limitation or consideration to be aware of.
Oh yeah, that's good to know. Well, what about using Skype in particular, like the instant messaging features, for example, with like non-Skype clients? Does it work with my America Online account?
So there was a time when Link Server was able to federate with America Online and Yahoo Instant Messenger, but both of those services dismantled their infrastructure for integration. So Skype for Business doesn't provide that capability. So the only external public consumer instant messaging tool that you can federate with is the Skype consumer service.
Okay. Let me ask you this. I'm just kind of curious. Those are the ones that come to mind for me as well. Are there other competitors in this instant messaging world besides Skype now?
That's an excellent question, and the answer there is quite definitely yes. There are, you know, we see a number of, I would say, late entrants to the concept that have organized their service around trying to be an alternative or a similar capability to instant messaging or SMS, short messaging service on cell phones. So there are services out there like WhatsApp and a couple other ones that names are escaping me now, but they tend to have pockets of geographic concentration around the world. Those might be seen definitely as competitors for the instant messaging function of Skype for Business.
But they don't offer these other features that are in
Yeah, most general. Of those in general do not. There are other competitors that, you know, focus on things like the presentations and desktop sharing capability. So there's a whole raft of competitor products in those areas as well. So Skype for Business, in my view, is the most comprehensive in terms of the set of capabilities that it offers in one product.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about how difficult it is to get from Link Server or Office Communicator, if that's what I have on-prem, and kind of converting over to Skype for Business, whether it's on-prem or moving it up into the cloud. Is that fairly straightforward? Is there a migration path for that?
It's definitely something that we encourage customers to do. We would like to see more and more of our customers take advantage of the Skype for Business online service because realistically it's expensive and time consuming to maintain on-premise server infrastructure for something that is what I would call an increasingly a commodity service. So in terms of the steps, the first thing, if you're on much older technology like Office Communication Server, it might be easiest to do what I would call kind of a cutover migration, where you would stand up and provision this Skype for Business online service for your enterprise, migrate all the customer accounts over during an outage window on a weekend or something like that, and then deploy the Skype for Business client right out to the desktops, replacing the older Office Communication Server client. That would be probably the simplest and most straightforward way, is to just kind of turn off the old infrastructure after you've moved everybody over into the cloud. For those organizations that have a modern and up-to-date server infrastructure, Link Server 2013 or Skype for Business Server on-premises, you have the additional option of moving into what's called a hybrid configuration. So for Skype for Business, what a hybrid configuration means is that some of your users will be served and homed on the on-premises server infrastructure, and other of your enterprise users will be served and homed on the web-based online service. And this hybrid migration technique is actually the approach that Microsoft Corporation ourselves are using for our internal accounts. So it's a multi-month migration process. We enabled the service within our Office 365 tenant and have been moving sets of users, migrating them from the on-premise infrastructure over to the cloud infrastructure. And the difficulty or complexity of that will vary a little bit depending on what you're doing as far as audit logging of IAM conversations and that kind of thing.
Interesting. Well, so I went to some seminar recently, and somebody came up and made a pitch for Microsoft, and they showed the new flat screens that are becoming available through this fall, and they talked a lot about some of the features available here, and they suggested that Skype would, you know, sort of take over as your webinar presentation type stuff and conference calling, and that was sort of they kind of had their eye on that, and they thought that they'd have a solution that ultimately they would win over that market as well. And they didn't quite say it was ready today, but they alluded to this is coming, so get ready.
Mm-hmm.
And take it, you know, that if you're already using these products, why not take advantage of this and reduce some other vendors and bills you might have on a regular basis. Can you talk a little bit about that?
The meeting room experience is something that Microsoft's been focused on for a number of years. As far as our in-market solution today, we do have a number of hardware partners that we've worked with that provide link room systems. So a link room system is a kind of dedicated set of coordinated hardware that you deploy into a meeting room. It's a touchscreen monitor, or in the case of like SmartBoard, they have styluses that are, you know, weighted and shaped like traditional whiteboard markers. And there's link client software built into that system so that it's a what we call a one-button meeting join experience. You walk into the room, you can schedule the room to be a participant in the meeting just like any other of the human participants, so that when you walk into the meeting room, the meeting is displayed on the flat screen display at the front of the room, and you just have to tap that and the meeting joins. The room joins the meeting automatically. And then the video experience can turn on and show all the participants in the room, and then all the remote participants join that same meeting using their regular Skype for Business client. And that works together with Skype for Business today. So that's kind of what our in-market solution is. I think the things that you may have been seeing as kind of coming attractions were probably alluding to where we're going with the Surface Hub product. So the Surface Hub is intended to be Microsoft's first-party entrant into that meeting room system marketplace. So we'll continue to have third parties such as like Crestron, SmartBoard, and there are a few others. We'll continue to have those third-party hardware vendors that they have the advantage in that they offer a broader set of integrated hardware for the conference center or meeting room facilities. So, you know, they'll still have a place in the market, but they will continue to integrate the Skype for Business meeting software into their products as well.
Well, you know, this podcast really doesn't do justice to that kind of stuff, you know, until you see it at all. As you describe it, I was imagining like, James Bond and those sorts of headquarter things, and you touch the screen, and people show up just like that. So it sounds slick, and it looked good when I saw it in the demo as well. And I messed around with the hub a little bit at the ILTA conference, and that technology is very slick. So I look forward to seeing all this come together. Is there anything else you'd like to tell us about Skype for Business that we might not already know, or?
I'll just highlight that there are some new features and capabilities that are coming to market. I touched a little bit on some of these earlier, but just to recap them. So the ability to do cloud-based audio conferencing as directly with Skype for Business without need for a third-party audio conferencing provider. That's a capability that's coming. We have the PBX replacement functionality coming to the cloud, and then we will eventually as well have PSTN calling capability. So in selected markets, as many as we can support, but there are some for telecom industry regulation reasons we, may be prohibited from serving. But for those that we can address, we would like to offer the ability for people to have SIP trunking come directly into our data centers and, provide your enterprise with PSTN calling. So all of that's on the horizon. And then the very last coming feature that I want to highlight is the meeting broadcast functionality. So this is one area where some of our competitors have held an advantage is in the, very, very large one-to-many type broadcast meetings. Skype for Business capability was not always ideal for that. So we've developed a variation that specifically serves broadcast meetings of up to 10,000 attendees. So that's great for marketing presentations and things of that nature.
That sounds great. Well, we started off these podcasts, and I think one of the things we talked about pretty early on was just moving Microsoft Exchange to the cloud with Office 365. And as an administrator, that was a big infrastructure to not lose sleep over anymore and sort of hand off the care and feeding to Microsoft. And it looks equally relaxing to hand off the PBX as well. So this is all great stuff, great technology. Larry Kuhn from Microsoft, thanks for joining us today and sharing on this. This is, again, just great information and glad to see it coming to market. My name is Tim Hooks, and I work at American Municipal Power, and on behalf of ILTA, thanks for joining the podcast today.
Thank you,
Any
Tim.
final
It's been
thoughts?
No, I think we covered it all. I appreciate the invitation to be here and look forward to talking again in the future.
Okay, sounds good, everybody. Have a great day. Thanks.